Hey, warmer from the low! Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Oops with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you, as we're going to be joined in segment number two by a good friend of ours, Blake Lovell, who does such great work over at Southeastern 16. We're going to recap the first few days for the Southeastern Conference. Now, we did this before Mississippi State got a scare and then an eventual cover on the closing line against North Alabama, but we're going to chat with him about what he's all seen here in the first few days, how encouraging slash not encouraging things have been. We're also going to be discussing just the dynamic of some of the teams in the SEC. We'll be taking a look forward to that Merrimack versus Auburn game as well. And then in the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday as we hit some bank shots. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter slash X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, Larsium, naming does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. Other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via the 5-star review. While I did not get in any Twitter slash X questions today, everything is powered by Better. Better is helping you just be able to get into the game on Daily Fantasy. If you type in the promo code of VSINPOD, that is VSINPOD, over at better.app, and that is BETR.app. So you want to go BETR.app, type in the promo code of VSINPOD. You get $10 free, no strings attached, no anything. You just get to get that $10 and you get to start playing. And now let's take a look at how they're playing out there on the court. Take a look at what we all saw in college basketball on Wednesday. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
Now, on many numbers, you were able to get there on North Alabama as they closed in a lot of places right around about 24.5 point underdogs. Barely got there, as for North Alabama, they find a way to get that cover, though they did blow an 8-point lead, 86-62, the final in this one. And for North Alabama, things were really rocking and rolling for them early on, but then Josh Hubbard, he was doing Josh Hubbard things for what was a pretty solid night out there in the SEC, as they were the lone SEC team that did not cover their game. But that said, for Josh Hubbard, he went out there and he was able to supply the team with 27 points. He goes 3-of-8 from 3-point range, and you were able to have Quincy Ballard in his first appearance with Mississippi State do a solid job down low. He provided 7 boards, 8 points, and off the bench for Mississippi State, Jabari McGee, he was able to supply 14 points. As for North Alabama, they lose a rebound battle 53-36, and that's where they really went wrong. And for North Alabama, the reason why they were able to hold in there, they go 7-of-19 from 3-point range. Meanwhile, Mississippi State, they went just 8-of-27 from 3-point range. For the SEC, you had LSU just completely take it to Tarleton State, this by kind of 96-60. So 2-0 to the over if you're betting Tarleton State games, as Tarleton State 7-of-22 from 3-point range. Kate Douglas off the bench did give the team 19 points, but on the flip side for LSU, you had Max McKinnon, the transfer that comes on over from Elon along with Portland. He was able to supply the team with 19 points. Robert Miller, the third, and Jalen Reed both had double figures off the bench. And for LSU, they went 33-of-47 from the floor. They did have 15 turnovers in this game, but they shot 70.2% from the field. So really good efficiency out there. And for Georgia, they just completely annihilated Maryland Eastern Shore. Maryland Eastern Shore, by the way, night number one, they put Georgia Tech to overtime. Not as successful here. 94-29, the final. Maryland Eastern Shore goes 1-of-18 from 3, 11-of-55 from the floor. And for Georgia, they had Cannon Catchings and Blue Kane combined for 30 points. So those two guys by themselves outscored Maryland Eastern Shore. Heck, you had more points off the bench for Georgia than you had total points for Maryland Eastern Shore, as you had Jake Wilkins provide 16 points off the bench. So a pretty solid night out there for the SEC. You only had one ranked team in action in Wednesday's action, and that team was unable to get a cover, as Creighton, they do get the win, but they do not cover against South Dakota, this by a count of 92-76, as for South Dakota, they only go 5-15 from 3-point range, but did a nice job of being able to drive the ball down low, as Mr. Bruns, Isaac Bruns, was able to supply the team with 16 points. And for Creighton off the bench, Owen Freeman, 19 points in 19 minutes. That was pretty efficient, coming off of a rough injury to end his season last year. Creighton, though, only 8-of-26 from 3-point range, so they were unable to cover that number that was touching right around about 30 on the closing line. You did see this team be able to get a relatively nice cover, though. UC Davis, they take it to North Dakota State. This by a count of 80-68. Looks like it might be a little bit of a rough three-point shooting year for North Dakota State after they were number one in all of college basketball. In terms of their three-point shooting percentage last year, they went 3 of 27. From three-point range, Tate Smith went 3 of 8 from 3, and as the team was 0 of 19. And UC Davis, they go 8 of 16 from three-point range. Connor Sevilla, 6 of 7 from three-point range, 26 points. So he was able to do a nice job of being able to power the team to victory. And it looks like this team is back to their old ways, as Rutgers last season was trying to play a little bit more up-tempo with having two NBA draft lottery picks on their team. They got back to their defensive roots, 81-53. They take it to Ryder to get the win and cover. Ryder 18 of 65 from the floor and 2 of 20 from 3-point range. Rutgers, meanwhile, 10 of 27 from 3, with Tariq Francis being able to supply the team with 20 points. So that was a rock-solid effort and a nice win and cover for Rutgers. LaSalle, they absolutely take it to Compensate, 87-59. And over for Compensate, but Compensate, one of your lesser teams in all of college basketball in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. And they look the part there. Temple, we give our ode to Lane Kiffin. Go Owls. Depending upon your closing number, they got the job done. They open up as 19-point underdogs, close more in that neighborhood of 17. They win 83-65 as for the Temple Owls. They did a nice job getting the ball to Aiden Tobiasen. He had 23 points in this game. Goes 3 of 6 from 3-point range. Temple, 8 of 21 from the outside. Delaware State, to their credit, 7 of 16 from 3-point range, but lost the turnover battle 16-6. That was a big reason why they were unable to get the job done, though. Zion Bethea, he was able to show a little bit of promise. He was able to have 20 points in this one. You had Butler show a lot of promise against Southern Indiana, 88-58, the final in this one. As for Southern Indiana, they did not have a field goal in the final 5 minutes. That's why they were unable to get the cover, as they shot 29% from the floor. And for Butler, he had a nice performance from Michael Ajayi, a guy that I'm very high on, 24 points and 12 rebounds. Meanwhile, Yuan Traore, in 16 minutes off the bench, 15 points, 6 rebounds. I would consider that to be pretty darn efficient. And for Butler, you had Finley Bizjak only get 7 points in this one, but he was able to help out with Jalen Jackson in the backcourt. Jackson was able to dole out 6 assists, so a nice showing out of that tandem. And Marquette, they get the win, but no cover against Southern. How about 100-82, the final, as Southern, they have now given up triple digits in each of their first two games, as Marquette was able to have Chase Ross go off for 23 points in this one, 14 of 36 from 3-point range for Marquette. And to the credit of Southern, they did a nice job getting to the free throw line, 21 of 29 at the charity stripe, so it was enough to be able to get them the cover. But certainly, defense looks like it needs to be whipped into shape a little bit. And Fresno State, as a pretty sizable favorite, you have to wonder what's going on here. 67-66 the final. I say that because Fresno State was involved in a gambling scandal last year, and Fresno State, after being up 11 points at the half, they toil pulled this game in the second half. And USC upset was one of your lesser teams in all of college basketball last year. Fresno State, 7 of 30 from 3-point range, and for Fresno State, they actually won the turnover battle 22-12. Despite winning the turnover battle by 10, they lose this game. That is not what you want to see there, but the Eric Olin era out there in New Mexico, that got off to a relatively solid start, 76 of 54. They were able to take down East Texas A&M. East Texas A&M closed as about 22.5-point underdogs, opened up as 21.5-point underdogs, so number actually very much came into play there, depending upon if you bet that early or late. The lone game that I'm unable to really recap for you guys is Loyola Marymount and Eastern Washington going on as I do this podcast. That game right now has Eastern Washington in the lead, 51-46. Do I have to have this up by midnight Pacific? And if you're looking trend-wise at what we're getting in college basketball right now, and I'll be talking a little bit more about these trends with Justin Perry of Shot Quality Bets tomorrow on the podcast, so you're able to look forward to that. But it's been favorites and overs thus far, with the late game or two pending in terms of the slate for Wednesday. Favorites are hitting at a clip of about 59.3% against the spread, 80-55-2 against the spread. Meanwhile, the over is hitting at a 55.6% clip, 75 overs, 60 unders, and you've had, I believe, 3 pushes along the way, might be 2, but certainly the over has been overwhelming. And coming next, we've got a man that overwhelms us with so much great information, Blake Lovell. He does an amazing job over at Southeastern 16, and he joins me next right here on Cusco Seats with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the Peterson Family Podcast. Are you looking to get an inside edge this college basketball season? Well, VSiN experts use CBB Analytics, the most comprehensive college basketball analytics platform in the world. See injury impact on and off data, clutch time performance metrics, first versus second half splits, and so much more. Utilize the promo code of VSiN, that is V-S-I-N, to get $30 off and find your betting edge over at cbbanalytics.com. That is cbbanalytics, all one word, .com. For anyone that is new to VSiN, well, I wish you a friendly hello. This is an attention to anyone that is new to VSiN because you're able to get some free stuff with our daily newsletter. It's a great way to catch up on everything that's happening in the sports betting world. It's delivered straight to your inbox every single morning. VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, strategies for the day's betting menu, and so much more. Sign up for free today over at VSiN.com/newsletter. That's VSIN.com/newsletter. And start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That is VSIN.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Cuss Eats with myself, Greg Eeps Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It is always great to be joined by this man as we've got Blake Lovell aboard. He does a tremendous job over at Southeastern 16, taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. I know that he's been hard at work taking a look at all these teams, whether it be the SEC or elsewhere, as well as he, much like myself, does an amazing job of covering the sport all 12 months out of the year. Join me for a lot of my conference preview podcasts as well. So a nice shout out there. You're able to follow Blake on Twitter at TheBlakeLovell. That's last name is spelled L-O-V-E-L-L. And Blake, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks as always for having me, Greg.
Blake, we finally have games to react to as we were doing a lot of speculating in the offseason. Thank goodness gracious that we could actually react to some things. And just how do you take a look at these first few days for the SEC? Because with the SEC, as we know, they just completely dominated non-conference play a season ago. And certainly there were some teams that looked rock solid, but certainly not quite the start that they had last year, especially with the defending champs in Florida losing that big game to Arizona.
Yeah, I think, and you know, in all the discussions we had in the offseason, one of the main themes was just that, look, I don't think you can expect the SEC to go 185-23 or whatever the stat was. I just don't think that's realistic in back-to-back seasons. It was, again, a sort of historic year for the conference. And yet, I think it's just inevitable that you're going to take a little bit of a step back. Now, whether that means they get 12 teams in the tournament, 10 teams in the tournament, this is going to decide it right here as non-conference play. Because like you said, you know, the Florida Arizonas, the Texas Dukes, like games like that, you know, the SEC probably splits that last year and you win one of those two games, but they're 0-2 in those two so far. So I think that's really what it comes down to. And, you know, kind of the initiative for the SEC has been for years to schedule stronger. Teams have scheduled stronger, and that's going to result in a few more losses. And hopefully some of those don't really hurt you very much. You know, again, Florida losing to Arizona is not really going to hurt them come NCAA tournament time. Same for Texas against Duke. But I do think you're seeing that it was sort of going to happen, that they were going to take a step back as a conference. I think the main thing I've said is I don't think the top of the conference is as strong as it was last year in terms of, it felt like every week we were talking about, well, there's six SEC teams in the top 14 or whatever nationally. And I just don't know if that's going to be the case this year. That will be one of the biggest differences. And, you know, we'll see if any of these SEC teams projected a little bit further down wind up losing some games they shouldn't, because that was the theme last year. Other than South Carolina losing game one of the season in North Florida, the SEC had no bad losses in non-conference play. That combination is going to decide a lot for this league.
Yep, and there was very nearly a terrible loss, right? Number one for the SEC as Auburn, they got pushed to the brink against Bethune-Cookman. That game goes to overtime, and I do think that it's worth noting. That might be the most talented SWAC team I've ever seen in my life. Well, you've got a former top 30 recruit in Ontario Morris coming off the bench. That's not your typical SWAC team. That said, you still don't want to be taken to overtime by a SWAC team if you made the Final Four a season ago. So give us a lowdown on Auburn, because in our conversations in the offseason, I think that we were both in lockstep feeling a little bit more bearish about this program. And for Auburn, I expected a little bit more from them night number one, even though I knew that it wasn't necessarily going to be the world's easiest game.
Yeah, like you said, I think that's what we tried to convince people on Monday morning, was that, listen, this is not a bad Bethune-Cookman team. They're not your typical SWAC makeup when it comes to their roster. And you know, expected it to be a little bit closer than maybe the spread indicated and all that. Now, again, I wasn't expecting it to go to overtime or anything like that. But you mentioned it. I mean, we were a little bit more down on Auburn than most people were, and that was before Bruce Pearl retired. And so I think when you add in that development, nothing against Stephen Pearl, we just don't have the sample size yet to completely judge him as a head coach. There were many questions about this team coming into the season. And I think for them to start the way they did, you know, defense, I think, leaves a bit to be desired. You know, offensively, Keyshawn Hall is going to stuff the stat sheet every night. I don't have any doubt about that. Beyond him, yeah, I mean, you had quite a few guys score in double figures, but I still think there's a lot to learn about this team in terms of who are going to be those main go-to type guys, because clearly they're testing out some different rotations and all that in that kind of game. But I still look at them, and, you know, one of the things too I think we talked about was, what are they going to look like shooting the ball? They went 6-23 from three, and there are some warranted questions about Auburn. And if you already had them before game one, this is only going to kind of fuel, you know, looking for those answers a bit more. And as we said too, Greg, in the offseason, good luck. You got two more games to get ready for what is going to be one of the toughest non-conference schedules in the country. And so, you know, Houston's coming up on November 16th. That's less than 2 weeks away. And so we'll see what they do against Merrimack. We'll see what they do against Wofford. Do they bounce back, clean some things up? If they do, then okay, then you really start to test yourself. But if we see some of those same themes, you know what's going to happen on November the 16th. Houston's going to exploit some of those. It'll be the same way with teams like Michigan and Arizona and Purdue. We're going to learn a lot about Auburn over this next month.
Yep, and I do want to dive into that Merrimack game a little bit more, as we do have Blake Lovell, who does such an amazing job over at Southeastern 16, joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. And I think that that's another game that is not going to be a pushover game, because if you're looking at that opening line with regards to the spread, Auburn is a 22.5 to a 23.5 point favorite. And you know as well as I do, Merrimack plays at one of the more strange styles in all of college basketball. They've got that amoeba zone. They've ranked in the top five in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis each out of the last 3 years. And having a young Auburn team, an Auburn team that hasn't played a lot together, I think this is actually a matchup that could give them some issues.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, if we're going to put the shooting theory to the test, like it could come into play in a game like this where you just want to see how, you know, consistent they can be, because there will be some teams this year that say, all right, we're not going to let Todd Pettifer drive into the lane and kick it to someone else, or, you know, throw up a lob to Hall or Murphy. We're not going to allow that to happen. And you're not going to let, you know, Murphy get offensive rebounds for easy buckets. Same with Keyshawn Hall. I mean, what, he got to the free throw line 18 times against Bethune-Cookman. I'm curious to see, you know, how they test Auburn when it comes to, again, just the defensive element. I feel like Merrimack, kind of looking at them a little bit before the season, seems like a team that certainly wants to play a few more guys than they did last year. I mean, they were just a very, you know, a team that played their starters pretty regularly last year. And I think they feel like they have a little bit more depth coming into the season. So, yeah, I mean, a team that I think is going to get up and down the floor a little bit more, you know, than they did last year as well. So I feel like this is one of those stylistic matchups that, coming off of game one, I think you can learn a lot about Auburn, because, you know, they're going to have to adjust to some different things here that Merrimack's going to throw at them, and we'll see if they can, you know, rise to the occasion.
Yep, and that is going to be a game that is going to be very intriguing to watch. And then this one should be an easy win, but that said, Texas A&M, they were a team that was very mysterious coming into the season. Bucky McMillan, he comes in a little bit late in the process because of how everything with Buzz Williams and Maryland went. But that said, how do you take a look at this Texas A&M team earlier on during the season, as with Texas A&M under Bucky McMillan, night number one, things were a pretty good, rousing success for them. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they just function, because it was actually Ruben Dominguez who was their top scorer. Because we talked about some of these guys like Rylan Griffin, Pop Isaacs, Frederico. On my bingo card was not Ruben Dominguez being the leader and scorer night number one.
Yeah, we should have known there was going to be one of these guys that just sort of, you know, and I think that was my theme all offseason, was just, man, I really like the starting lineup. And we kind of expected it to be a certain way. And well, like you said, there's someone who comes in and shows you that this team may have a little bit more depth than we thought. And that was really one of the biggest questions I had about A&M. You know, I kind of put them in that same category as Vanderbilt, maybe not to that high of a level. I think Vanderbilt can be a top five team. I don't know if A&M can necessarily be top five, but I think that they are certainly one of those contenders for sleeper teams in the SEC this season. And I think A&M fans were very happy, Greg, as you would imagine. They scored 98 points in the opener against Northwestern State. They said, wait a second, when's the last time we scored 98 points? And that would have been, I think, that Nebraska game 2 seasons before in the NCAA tournament. So it's like, you're going to see a different style. And I think, as we talked about this offseason, I don't know if they have all the pieces just yet that they need to run Buckyball perfectly. But I think they've got enough to where you're going to see this team be probably one that come January, February, I think they're going to give some people some issues. And, you know, their non-conference schedule not as strong as many other SEC teams. I think that was one of the talking points we had a couple weeks ago, was that they really are probably in a position where, don't be shocked if they're this year's Oklahoma, where they were to potentially run the table in non-conference play, because they've got some of those games, you know, home game against UCF, they go to Pitt, you know, SMU on a neutral court. Like, these are all winnable games for Texas A&M. And so I think they're one to keep an eye on. Could they be kind of the, you know, the perfect start type team, or even lose a game somewhere? That'll put them in a pretty good position heading into SEC play.
Yep, I do think that that'll put them in great position, as well as we've got Blake Lovell, who does an amazing job over at Southeastern 16, joining me on Cusco Soups. And even though they are not going to be playing on Thursday, I want to get your thoughts on Vanderbilt, because we both are very much big giant stands of Vanderbilt this season. You're currently based in Nashville, Tennessee. I spent a year out there in Nashville, Tennessee myself, just out of college, and I really think that this team has a lot of upside. It felt like they did a nice job of addressing their big issue with regards to rebounding from a season ago. This offense was very high-powered against Lipscomb, albeit a Lipscomb team that was breaking in a new coach that was coming up from the D2 ranks, so that was a very unenviable task for the Bisons out there. But that said, take me through this Vanderbilt team. What you saw night number one, and I know you just said it, you think that they might have the potential to be a top five team when it's all said and done.
I mean, look, I look at them and feel like they are one of these teams that, and like you said, it's worth putting the context of, yes, Lipscomb is kind of in a little bit of a rebuild mode. We understand that. But at the same time, Vanderbilt's one of those eye test type teams where if you watch that game the other night and you just watch how they play, I think it tells the story as to what they can be. And it's just, we talk about Bucky McMillan and can they play Bucky ball, you know, with this particular roster, maybe another year before they get all the pieces they need. But like, Vanderbilt has all the pieces they need to play Mark Byington style. And, you know, that is a team that's going to get out in transition. They're going to space the floor, look to get, you know, open threes, and then they're going to just get after you on defense to try to force some of those turnovers to get easier baskets. And when they go 17 to 31 from three, and it's not just that, you know, Tyler Nickel goes 6 of 9, Tyler Tanner goes 4 of 5, Tyler Harris hits a couple. It's just like, they have so many guys. Duke Miles hit a couple. They have so many guys that can beat you. And someone asked me the question earlier. They're like, well, I don't know that I fully expected this with Vanderbilt. And admittedly, they were like, I haven't, you know, that's not the team that I necessarily focus on. But, you know, they had Jason Edwards last year. They had Jalen Carey. How are they a better team? And I said, I think it's just that. I think they are more balanced in terms of the team aspect. Nothing against those guys. Those were very skilled individual players, but I don't know that the full, you know, team thing came together because they were very reliant on certain guys. I don't think this team has to be reliant on anyone in particular. They may have 6 to 7 guys that they can rely on any given night that could score 20 points. And I think that's going to be the hardest thing for teams to do when they try to match up with this Vanderbilt team. The defense, you know, looks good after night one for sure. I think that may still be something, especially in the, you know, around the rim. I want to see how that plays out, but I really do believe that if we're looking at a team, and I know it caught people off guard when KenPom came out with his, you know, preseason analytics, and Vanderbilt was sitting there at 19th, and people were like, "Wait a second, why?" I think, you know, game one certainly showed you why that is the case, and don't be surprised if they are a team that, again, works their formula. May not get all the headlines, may not be the flashy team that some of these other teams are going to be, but I think they're going to win a lot of games, and that could put them right there in top five SEC type status, you know, maybe eventually a top 10, top 15 team nationally. So,
yeah, I'm right there with you. I am very bought in on this Vanderbilt Commodores bunch. I think that Mark Byington is doing a rock solid job with them. We saw night number one, and I think that we're going to be seeing a lot more of that moving forward. So that is a team that I'm feeling bullish on. And Blake, we finally do have games to be able to react to, and this could be SEC, this could be elsewhere. Was there anything else from night number one, and as we're doing this, the first three nights of the college basketball season, that really surprised you? It could be to the positive, it could be to the negative, it could be a specific player, anything like that. Just anything over these first few nights that really stood out to you.
Yeah, I'll throw a couple things your way. I'll start with Arkansas, because, you know, we always, when we talk about Arkansas, I think it's the offensive side of things. And, you know, that's usually a Cal discussion of, you know, Cal's evolution as a coach offensively, and will he put them in the right position? Because, again, they've been frustrating at times, whether it was some of those, you know, kind of frustrating seasons at Kentucky, or just kind of last year at Arkansas, you kind of, you know, bit of a slow start. And then, of course, you know, just couldn't score an SEC play early on. But I think you see kind of the dynamic they're working with these freshmen, with Darius Acuff and Malik Thomas. And then, of course, you know, you go deeper into the lineup with Carter Knox, who didn't even play in that game. I think that they're going to be really good. And I think the offensive element for them, and I mean, Trevin Brazil scores 25 in that one. I think if that's, you know, they're not going to play Southern every night. I understand that. But at the same time, the flow was there offensively. And I think hopefully for Arkansas fans, they're going to be a little bit further along. We'll find out on Saturday, of course, when they go to Michigan State. So, I thought Arkansas was a big one. And I'll mention the obvious one and, you know, maybe you said surprise, Greg. I don't know that I'm fully surprised, but the more I looked at Arizona when we went into that Florida game, the more I was just – I kept telling, you know, my colleague Max Barr, I kept saying, hey, I just like this Arizona team more and more heading into that game against Florida. And then to see what they did coming back, you know, getting down early by double figures and, you know, eventually making the comeback and really just controlling the game from there, controlling what I thought was the best front court in the country in Florida. Still think Florida's going to be fine. But to me, this was way more about Arizona than it was Florida. And I know sometimes we tend to focus on the negative, especially when we're talking about a defending national champion. But I think Arizona is the real deal. And, you know, I'm sure as you've seen, one of the things we talked about too is like you can look at the betting odds out there and see Arizona with like the sixth, even maybe seventh best odds to win the Big 12. And I just went into that game saying, if that's the sixth or seventh best team in the Big 12, then we're going to have a runaway for maybe top conference because they are a legit, I think, top five, top 10 team. And I just think the matchup nightmares they're going to create, whether it's Coa Pete, whether it's Jaden Bradley off the dribble, or any of the other guys. I mean, the freshman, you know, Braden Berries is not going to go, you know, whatever, one of six, whatever he was from the floor every night. He's going to knock down shots. And so I really like this Arizona team. And I don't think that was just, you know, sort of a fluke by any means. I think they are a legitimate, you know, Elite Eight type team without question.
Yeah, I do think so as well with Arizona. I mean, that was a team that a lot of people, you mentioned it, they were picking them like fifth, sixth in the Big 12. And I think that that speaks to how really good the Big 12 could be. TCU losing to New Orleans was not necessarily great for the Big 12. I will say that. That was a little bit of a surprise. And I do need to throw that in there as well, as we have seen some wild and crazy upsets. Boise State losing to Hawaii Pacific, a team who's campus is in a strip mall. What do we make out of some of those performances as well? Because it is early on during the season, but when you're a team at home losing to a Division II school whose campus is in a strip mall, when you're TCU and you lose to a school whose general manager is Master P over there at New Orleans, yes, Master P is really involved with the New Orleans program, those are signs of concern as well.
Yeah, I tell you, I don't think you can ever underestimate these kind of first, you know, opening night type games and even games that are a little, you know, still part of the early season schedule where it's like, yes, like the definition of them are bye games. But at the same time, it's like when you have so many teams now at the high power conference level that are mixing and matching rosters each year and they're, you know, trying to work in new players. And as we always say, like it's one thing to see it in the summer when your guys are going against each other and maybe you see a little bit in the exhibitions or secret scrimmages, but it's another thing to actually get out there in a, you know, regular season game where, you know, there are a little bit more limitations in terms of like rules and structure and all that. And you can never underestimate the mental side of this in terms of, for me, yes, like we can say these teams have all the physical tools and how they're much better at basketball, you know, than some of these teams that are going to come in, like you said, a D2 team, a team that's picked lower, you know, in these low major conferences and pulls an upset. I just think like it's that type of game where these guys come in with nothing to lose. And if you have some of these teams that are still trying to figure out exactly what they are, whether again, it's a TCU, it's an Oregon, it's an Auburn, you know, these are games that are going to wind up playing out the way that they have. And I just don't think you can underestimate sort of the motivational aspect for these teams who come in with nothing to lose. And they just kind of, you know, are playing a team that very clearly still does not have it all figured out, despite maybe being the more talented team. It just doesn't always work out that way.
Yep, I am right there with you. And I do think that it's going to be a lot of fun to see what we're going to be getting this upcoming season. Blake, you're doing a great job of covering it all over there at Southeastern 16. You've been hard at work getting set for this amazing season. You're doing a great job now that we do have the season off and running. So let the good people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, always appreciate it, Greg. Yeah, you can find us over at Southeastern 16. Of course, daily SEC basketball stuff. Mentioned previously, we're kind of doing a little bit of a look at some more high-profile national games this year as well, so you can get our thoughts on those and how they tie into, you know, some of these kind of juggernaut SEC non-conference schedules with some of these opponents they'll see. So you can get lots of thoughts, even beyond the SEC, over at Southeastern 16 Daily. And then, yeah, everything else college basketball related, you can find me on Twitter/X at the Blake Level.
And Blake does such an incredible job taking a look at this great game of basketball every single time he joins me. Learned such great insights and did so once again today. So big thanks to Blake for joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Thursday as we hit some bank shots. Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peters, and now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It is always a pleasure to be joined by our good friend Blake Lovell. He does such great work over at Southeastern 16. Today, get a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. Every single time he joins me, he lends such great insights, and he did so once again today. So, a big thanks to Blake for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter/X feed at GUnit_81. We're going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the games in bigger conferences first in time order, and then in time order, the extra games. These involve schools from the smallest conferences, the NEC, the Atlantic Sun, the MEAC, the SWAC, the Southland, the America East. Those are going to be the games that are going to be listed at the bottom if I didn't say Big South, Big South. Let's start things off with 653, 654 on the card. Boston College plays host to the Citadel. The Citadel is between a 16.5 to an 18-point dog. Total on this game between 143.5 to a 144. And I'm willing to take a shot here on the under. I saw my total at 136.5. The Citadel has been one of the most featured offenses in all of college basketball ever since Ed Conroy took over. And it's not even like they're playing up tempo or anything like that. For the Citadel last season, they were 353rd in 3-point shooting percentage, 348th in points scored on a per possession basis, all while being 295th in the country in terms of their overall possessions per game. Now, they do retain quite a few pieces from the season ago. I don't necessarily know if that's a good thing. Solo Edbasi last season was able to pull in their 5 rebounds per game, so he's a little bit of an upside guy for this unit, but you just take a look at what you're going to be able to get in terms of your overall scoring for this team, and there's lots of question marks. They were able to take down a non-Division 1 team to begin the season, and they do have a guy in Kenyon Davis, who I think is relatively solid, limited to 13 games last season, but in that small sample size, he was averaging about 9 points per contest. But again, another guy that was shooting less than 30% from 3-point range a season ago, so they've got a lot of question marks in terms of backcourt. And for Boston College, they yacked away their game a few nights ago against Florida Atlantic, but the defense did look relatively solid against Florida Atlantic. That was a game that ended 83-78 in overtime, but in regulation and regulation only, they gave up 66 points. Donald Ann, he was a 14-point per game scorer from a season ago that is back. He's ahead of the stake for the team. Like everyone else is trying to help him out. Fred Payne, the Payne train last season, was averaging about 7 points per contest off the bench. It looks like he's going to be playing a nice role for this team. They don't necessarily have a ton down low, but other than at BC, it's not like the Citadel does either. And Broden Koepke, he looked relatively good night number one. Koepke, he was a part-time starter over at Butler a season ago, and he had 8 rebounds, 17 points in that opening game, so it looks like he's going to be able to do some nice things at 6'11", even though this is not a Boston College team that I necessarily have high expectations for whatsoever. This is a Citadel team that I think is really rough. I set my line at 18.5. I'm going to lay up to 18 here with Boston College, and I'm in on the under semi total at a 136.5. We go to 655, 656 on the card. Illinois State is on the road against Ohio. Ohio is between a 1-point favorite to a 1.5-point underdog. Total on this game between 158.5 to a 159, and I'm in on this total under. I did set my total at a 150.5, and Illinois State was a top 50 team last season in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, and you've got two teams that really lit it up from three. Ohio was playing a very good tempo last year, 23rd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Illinois State was not. Illinois State was 313th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Now, both of these teams were 282nd or worse in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage, but I have reason to believe that Illinois State not going to be quite as efficient on offense this year as they were a season ago, despite the fact that they actually bring back three of their top four scorers from a season ago. But they do lose Dalton Banks. He was the main facilitator, giving out four assists per contest. Bowden Skunberg, who comes on over from North Dakota State, pretty much missed all of last season due to injury. Two seasons ago, was a very nice, versatile piece. He's going to need to step up for this team. You have to love the fact that they brought back Chase Walker. He should be a bit of a dominator down low. 15 points, 6 boards at 280 pounds. He actually has some sneaky good versatility. And then got a guy in Johnny Kinziger who was shooting 38.5% for 3, 14.5 points per contest. 8 seasons ago, Ty Pence, another high 33-point shooter. But I think that Ohio is going to be better with their perimeter shooting as they added some nice pieces via the transfer portal. You've got a guy coming in from Appalachian State in D.R. Connors who was averaging about 8 points on 40% 3-point shooting. App State was a really good defensive team a season ago. And Aiden Hathaway, him coming back after being limited 18 games a season ago is big. Prior to him going down with injury, 10 points, about 6 boards per contest. He, in that opening game against Arkansas State, had 28 points now. Also in that opening game, you did see this Ohio Bobcats team really give it up from three-point range, so still a little bit of a question mark there, but Jalen Breath, who comes on over from UNC Greensboro, should be able to give this team a bit more down low, is averaging about 7 rebounds per game with the Spartans, so I do have reason to believe that this is going to be an Ohio team that's going to be a little bit better on the glass, and really, neither of these teams did a good job of being able to pull in their offensive rebounds. Both of these teams were outside the top 275 in terms of percentage of their missed shots. That did result in an offensive rebound, so there's not going to be a lot of second and third chances to be at, which is a big reason why I'm going to be willing to take a shot on this total under. And I think that Jackson Pavelski, who comes back for Ohio, he was the main facilitator from a season ago, over 4 assists, 14 plus points per contest, is going to be the difference maker in this game. Said Ohio is a 2.5 point favorite, so I'm willing to take Ohio laying a 1 slash as a money line underdog to go along with this total under. 657, 658 on the card. West Virginia plays those to Campbell. The Fighting Campbells find themselves as 15.5 to 17 point underdogs. So on this game, it is 140.5. I'm going to be willing to take a shot here with Campbell. I did set them as an underdog of just 11.5 points. I recognize that Campbell did lose that first game against Wisconsin by 32 points, but that was a very competitive game until 8:30 remaining. It was a case where Wisconsin went, I believe, on a 27-2 run to end the game. Like, that was a 5-point game with 8.5 minutes remaining. The Campbell defense was doing a relatively okay job, and then Wisconsin just went into inferno mode. I think that there's going to be a lot of teams that suffer for that fate. But for Campbell, even though they do lose a few of their top guys from a season ago, having DJ Smith come on over from the Ryzen League, he was over at Robert Morris a season ago, that's big for the team, and he figures to be a mid-headline piece for the team after last year, he was averaging about 9.3 assists per contest out there in the Ryzen League, shot 39% from 3, had 23 points in that season opener. This is not going to be a team that's going to have a wealth of different size, but bringing in the Pepperdine transfer in Dovideas Butka, who's saying 6'9", he should be solid. He had 8 rebounds in that first game against Wisconsin. I like the fact that they've got Tezos Cook being able to take a stride forward from the season gone. For West Virginia, this is going to be a very slow and controlled team. They bring in Russ Hodge, who was the coach over at North Texas. And North Texas, they were outside the top 360 in terms of total possessions per game a season ago. We saw them against Mount St. Mary's get the job done by a kind of 70-64 as Jasper Floyd had a nice game in that one. He came on over from North Texas. Brendan Lorient did as well. So these guys all know the system. They've got a 7-footer in Harlan Obiena, who's going to be able to control things down low. Very interesting that Trayson Eaglestaff, who's figuring to be one of the top scorers for this team, last season when he was over at North Dakota, he was supplying the team with 19 points per contest. He had one more point than myself, Nate, number one. I do think that that's going to be going a little bit northward. Hunter Huff was a nice 3-point shooter over at Chattanooga as well, but for this West Virginia bunch, I think that this is going to be a team that's going to be playing very slow, defense-oriented, and Campbell was a top 20 team last year in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage. They do a nice job being able to lock it down there. I do think that Campbell is going to lose that battle down low, but I think that they do more than enough to be upheld within this game. I set my line at 11.5, so taking the points with Campbell, set my total at 131.5. I'll select this one under. 659, 660 on the card. The Drake is going to be playing us our Robert Morris. Oh, Bobby Morris is an underdog of 8.5 points. So this game is between 148.5 to a 150.5, and I did set my total at a 144.5. I'm going to be in on this total under for Robert Morris. They had a bunch of turnovers in that game against Iowa. I believe that they had north of 18 turnovers in that game, but I do think that that speaks a little bit more to how good Iowa is going to be rather than how bad this Robert Morris team is going to be. Now, Robert Morris, they're going through a lot of transition. I think that would be far-fetched to think that they're going to go back-to-back to the NCAA tournament because they lose that entire backcourt from a season ago. They're going to be built down low around Nicholas Chidkulis, who last season over at North Carolina A&T was supplying 9 rebounds per game, had 9 boards in that season opener against Iowa. And for Robert Morris, it is concerning that they failed to get to 70 points despite the fact that they shot 45.8% from three-point range in that game against Iowa. That's not great, to say the least, and that's a little bit of a reason why I did set Drake here as a 9.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay that number as, for Drake, this is probably not going to be like a high-pressure defense or anything like that. You bring in Eric Henderson from South Dakota State. South Dakota State was always a little bit more of a make-it-and-take-it sort of team, and a team that did dial back their tempo in recent years. Now, they do bring in a guy in Jalen Quinn, who's going to be a little bit of an elevator for this team. He spent the beginning part of his career over at Loyola Chicago, had 20 points in the season opening game against Northern Arizona, and in the game against Northern Arizona, it took this team quite a bit of time to get going, but there's reason to believe that this team should be rock solid down low. Wilgens Exekte, along with Aku Federico, these two guys combined for 20 rebounds in that season opening game, so you'll love to see that. It's going to be a case where the backcourt is going to be interesting for this team, because it does appear as though there's an injury or two along with the Drake Bulldogs team, as we really didn't see a lot of Owen Larson. As a matter of fact, he missed that game, and he was out towards back half of the season last year. He was one of the main guys that did come on over with Henderson from South Dakota State. So in the meantime, you're probably going to be looking at quite a bit of Jashawn Thomas hold down the fort, who did have 15 points night number one, and the versatility of Isaiah Carr, who missed much of last season with Denver but is a true 7-footer that's able to pull under some boards. That's going to be big for the team as well. But for Robert Morris, I do think that they take such a big step back with having to rely upon junior college transfers in the backcourt, and I do think that Drake takes advantage of that here. So I did set my line here at a 9.5. I'm willing to lay up to 9 with the Drake, and I did set a total of a 144.5. I'm going to be in on this total under. 661, 662 on the betting board. Omaha Set Hike is on the road against Abilene Christian. Abilene Christian is a 3.5 to a 4.5 point favorite. Total is between 153.5 to a 154, and I think this total is too high. I set my line at a 145.5. I'm in on the under. Abilene Christian is always a really good team in terms of being able to generate turnovers. As a matter of fact, they were numero uno in all of college basketball in terms of turnovers forced on a purpose possession basis last year. They force a turnover on 23.5% of opponents' possessions. They absolutely housed Omaha in the same matchup last year on the road, and this is an Omaha team that they bring back quite a bit, so they are going to be a little bit more used to the style after they saw last season. But still, with Omaha, you do lose a few of those main guys, like a Markel Sutton from the season ago, so that's going to be affecting this team quite a bit. The good news for Omaha is that they, night number one, even though they did take the loss, they were able to look relatively okay offensively against Murray State. They were able to explode in the second half, as Tony Osborne is really going to be getting the keys to the car this season after he was registering about 12 points on 39% three-point shooting a season ago. Lance Waddle spent a little bit of time as the primary point guard a season ago. He might need to do so again because they had just 6 assists in that opening game, so that's a little bit of a concern. Cameron Thomas is a guy that's going to give you about 4 or so rebounds per game. He returns from a season ago, but for this Abilene Christian team, it's just one of these teams that they are relentless in the way that they get after you, and they just generate turnover after turnover. They do lose a few guys that were very rock solid for them a season ago, so they're going to be looking to Rich Smith to be taking over and giving you quite a bit after. He was the main facilitator with a steal and a half, 3 assists per contest. Keon Williams being out of the fold for this team along with Leonardo Beutel. These were the top 2 scorers from a season ago. That does change around this Abilene Christian team a little bit, which is actually why I think that they're going to be even more defense-oriented than they have been in past years. They do bring back a guy in Braden Hubbard who has given them double figures in about 6 rebounds per game. Abilene Christian's main kryptonite is that they typically are well outside the top 250 in terms of their rebound percentage, but bringing in Joseph Van Zandt from Liberty I thought was big. He was limited to just 8 games 8 seasons ago. In his last full year at Liberty, he was a full-time starter that was giving you about 5.5 points, 6 boards, a steal per contest. Very versatile guy, not necessarily an amazing scorer, but is a really good defensive player in. I think that that's the way that Abilene Christian is going to be getting after it. That's why I did set a relatively low total here. Even though Omaha was a very prolific three-point shooting team last year, much of that prolific three-point shooting actually came in non-conference play. I do have question marks with this Abilene Christian team in terms of their offense, and that's a big reason why I can only set that line at 3.5. Right now, I'm seeing some 4.5s out there. I'm going to take 4-plus here with Omaha, but I'm going to be in on this total under as well, so I total at a 145.5. 663, 664 on the card. Cal State Northridge CSUN is on the road against Northern Iowa. Northern Iowa is a 9.5-point favorite. So this game is between 152.5 to 153, and so Northern Iowa is a 9.5-point favorite. I'm seeing a few nines out there. 9 is my absolute max buy point on Northern Iowa, but I would be willing to lay the 9 here. For Northern Iowa, they're getting back to their roots. Last year, they were outside the top 300 in terms of total possessions per game. Now, still a very efficient offense, a top 100 team in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, so you absolutely do love to be able to see that, and I do think that once again this is going to be a unit that gets things rocking and rolling with bringing back so much from a season ago that I think is going to be able to allow them to have quite a bit of success. As you do lose Titan Anderson from a season ago, Titan Anderson was that top scorer with about 15.5 points per contest, but Leon Bond, who dealt with a little bit of injury towards the back half of last season, began his career over at Virginia. Getting him back after he was averaging about 10 points per contest is big. Trey Campbell was a double figure scorer for them, giving out right around on 3 assists, shot 43% from 3-point range. Good versatility. He's back in the fold as well. You bring back Ben Schwieger, stand 6'8". Good versatility there. So I really do like what this team brings to the table there. And Max Weisbrod, who was a really good Division II player a few seasons ago, another year in the system out of him, I think is going to be massive. And then for the Cal State Northridge team, I do love the fact that you've got just a team in general that has a lot of versatility. Now, they do lose Marcus Adams from a season ago. Marcus Adams was the head of the state for them, a guy that was able to give you like 19 points per contest. He's now playing over at Arizona State, so that is going to be affecting them a little bit, and where they go in the backcourt is going to be very intriguing, because with this Matadors team, they do lose so much of that offense from a season ago. It appears as though Jordan Brinson is probably going to be seeing quite a bit of time for this team after last season. He was relatively glued to the bench, but you take a look at what he was able to do during the 2023-24 campaign. He was averaging more than about 8 points. He threw in there 3.5 assists per contest, so he's a guy that figures to have the ball in his hands quite a bit. That was in a small sample size because he's dealt with injuries over the last few seasons, but what you're going to be able to get out of a guy like a Mohamed Fofana, I think, is very interesting. Last season, he was giving the team about 8 points, 5 rebounds per game. Those are two of your main holdovers from a season ago, and then they've got an upside guy in Larry Hughes II. Yes, that is of relation to Larry Hughes. He was a starter over at St. Louis a few seasons ago, just dealt with injuries last season, so CSUN really gambled on a lot of guys. They were dealing with injuries. Josh O'Garro was a solid scorer over at Texas State last season, if I'm not mistaken. Began his career over at Oklahoma, and I really do like the system under Coach Newman, where they do play super-duper up-tempo. They've got a lot of positionless basketball going on, but that said, with all the just turnover that they've got, and they're probably going to be looking to someone like an Alex Smotrich download to be able to give you some good rebounding after he just couldn't get out there on the floor over at Florida and Charlotte over the last few seasons. International man of mystery that comes on over from Germany. I believe his brother played at Michigan. It is going to be intriguing to see how things turn out there with the lack of chemistry for CSUN and a Northern Iowa team that has played together. I do think the Northern Iowa is going to be able to dictate their terms a little bit more in this game. So I did set my total at 145.5, like the under with Northern Iowa. We'll have a layup to 9 with them. 665, 666 on the card. North Dakota is going to be playing us to UC Riverside. UC Riverside is a pick'em to a 1-1.5 point favorite. Total on this game between 152.5 to a 153. Zed Riverside is a 3.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. Now, the UC Riverside, they undergo a coaching change in the season as Mike Magpio. He's now over there at Fordham, and the Magpio era over there at Fordham got off to a loss to the New Jersey Institute of Technology, so that was not necessarily great, but I love the fact that they bring in Gus Arginal, who is a really good Division II mastermind, and he did a nice job in terms of being able to build up this roster. He brings with him quite a few guys that were stars at the non-Division I level, and then he brings over someone like BJ Colley, who he didn't see a ton of minutes over at Montana State, but there's reason to believe that he's got some upside. 9.7 rebounds in their opening game against a non-D1 team. Andrew Henderson is one of those guys that made the leap forward on up to the Division I ranks. He looked really good night number one. Dylan Godfrey is a guy that comes on over from Canisius, where he was averaging about 8.5 points. A little bit of versatility at 6'8", is able to shoot about 32% per three. Is going to give you a few rebounds per game. This is going to be a team that's looking to play a lot of positionless basketball, and if they can get Denzel Hines going, he did not play much much in that opening game, but he was a starter over at Coastal Carolina last year that was able to give you about 6 points per contest. There's reason to believe that this Riverside team should be pretty rock solid down low, and for North Dakota, they failed to put up 35 points in the second half against Alabama in their game a few nights ago. North Dakota looks a little bit improved on defense, mainly because you have no place to go but up when you're outside the top 345 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, but it looks like this is going to be very much a team that's going to be struggling to score this season. I am Paul Sather. He's really got an uphill battle here. Eli King began his career over at Iowa State. He had 11 points tonight, number one, but they really lost five out of their top seven scorers from a season ago with losing Trayson Eaglestaff, who is the heart and soul of that team. That means that George Nikshavili, who's standing 6'10", he's going to need to step up. This team does have some size, as you've also got 6'10" Ryan Erickson, who should be able to do a relatively solid job down low, but the guard play is just so out of sorts. They're most likely going to be looking at a freshman at Anthony Smith III to be running the point. They had the ball in his hands quite a bit in that game against Alabama. Anthony Doppler is someone that might be seeing a few minutes as well, and that's a place where you don't want to be if you're this backcourt. And with North Dakota really not having a lot of guard play, it's a team that I think is going to be needing to play a little bit more low and slow with regards to their tempo as well. I do think that they're going to be facing an uphill battle against a Riverside team that, even though they've got a lot of guys coming on over from the D2 ranks, I think that they're going to be rock solid right away. I did set my total at a 149.5 with just not a lot of guard play for North Dakota. I'm in on the under end. I'm going to lay up to three here with UC Riverside. 667, 668 on the betting board. It is Wright State, and they hope to be the right side as they're on the road against California. California is a favorite of 12.5 to 14 points. It's on scheme between 152.5 to a 153.5, and I did set my total 149.5. I'm going to be in on this total under as for Cal, they looked a little bit improved in terms of their defense against Cal State Bakersfield. Meet for the Roadrunners, and well, for the Roadrunners, it's going to be a rough season for them after they had the late coaching change, so I do take that result with a little bit more of a grain of salt, but for Wright State, they just have so much turnover from a season ago, and I just can't take them in this spot, because with Wright State, typically when you hear that name, you think, oh, relatively solid mid-major and things like that, but I mean, you lose the Norris guys from a season ago, so that's going to be a little bit of an issue for you. Alex Ibagirse, who was giving you like 13 points per contest, he's now out of the fold as well, and it means that they're going to be really looking to Michael Emerige. He comes over after he had a solid season over at Houston Christian a few years ago. Last year at Wright State was more of a part-time starter with about 6.5 points per contest. They really need him to get back to averaging 15 points per game like he was a season ago. This is going to be a unit as well that is going to be looking quite a bit to Michael Cooper. He's a true freshman that saw 10 points in that season opening game. Brian Intamino, he's a rock solid player that comes on over from Merrimack, one of the better teams in terms of generating turnovers. And it did appear as though in the offseason that this was a unit that was very much taking it upon themselves to be able to improve this defense a little bit. But when you're relying upon Logan Woods and company in the backcourt, that's a bit of an issue. And for Cal, Day-Day Ames, who was seeing some nice minutes over at Virginia a season ago, I think that he's going to be able to do a nice job of be able to thrive in this backcourt. I just flat out think that this is going to be a well-coached team under Mark Madsen as well, and bringing in a bona fide scorer, a guy that was averaging 16.5 points per contest, 40% from 3 points. John Camden, he had 22 points in that night, number one game. That's rock solid. And speaking of rock solid, this team should be able to win the battle down low with Lee Dort, who came on over from Vanderbilt a few seasons ago. He had 9 rebounds, night number one. And then I think that there's a lot of upside with Chris Bell. He comes on over from Syracuse. You may recall when he was at Syracuse during the 2023-24 campaign, shot 42% from three, 12 points per contest, took a little bit of a setback last season. I think that they're going to be able to utilize him to the fullest against a Wright State team that is dealing with a lot of transition from a season ago. And I think with Wright State, they're looking to turn over a little bit of a new leaf with their defense. I think that they're going to be a little bit better defensively, but I think that they've taken some strides backwards with regards to their offense. Set my line at 15.5, one to lay up to 15 with Cal, and on the under as well, so my total 149.5. This is the last game on the normal Las Vegas betting board before we eat the extra game. 669, 670. Washington plays us at Denver. The Pioneers are looking to Pioneer cover as between 25.5 to 27.5 point underdogs. So it's between 154.5 to a 155. Set my total here at a 152.5. I'm going to be looking to the under. Now for Denver, they did something that I absolutely love. They went the Division II route with their coaching change from a season ago. They bring in Tim Bergstetter. He was over at MSU Moorhead, that's Minnesota State Moorhead. He was able to lead that team to a 75-22 record, and He brought with him a lot of talented Division II guys. Even though they lost to Seattle by a count of 84-73, they just looked like so much more of a competent team than they have in past seasons. And I do think that there is quite a bit of upside with this Denver team. I do think that they're running into a Washington team that is going to be much better on defense under James Franklin here in year number two. They held Arkansas Pine Bluff to 50 points. I'm not going to make too much out of that because it is Arkansas Pine Bluff. But still, you take a look at this bunch for Denver. Someone like Zane Nelson making the leap up to the Division 1 ranks along Jeremiah Burke. These were two guys that were very rock solid at the D2 ranks. I like their game. And then you've got a guy with some good Division 1 experience in Julius Rollins, who comes out over from Western Illinois. He was registering about 9.5 points, was able to throw in their 4.5 boards as a little bit of a this and that sort of combo guard. He had 9 points at number 1 in that game against Seattle. I'm thinking that there's reason to have upside there. And then with this Washington unit, I do think that they have a much, much more balanced team than they did a season ago. Last season, and it was all about great Osabor, and more great Osabor. And this season, they actually decided to spread the wealth a little bit as they bring in a pair of guys from USC, Desmond Claude, along with Wesley Yates. Yates, ironically enough, began his career over at Washington. Zoom Diallo, he was dealing with a little bit of an injury in the offseason. He looked very good night number one, was able to put in their 14 points. And then the international man of mystery, Hines Steinbach, 21.7 boards. He really started night number one at 6'11". He doled out 6 assists as well. This team should be able to dominate the battle down low as Lathon Somerville and Franny Kepadog were able to combine for 14 rebounds. Bryce Tucker was able to throw in their 10 boards. They did allow Pine Bluff, though, to get 16 offensive rebounds. That's a little bit of an issue. So I do think that there's going to be a lot of second and third chance opportunities in this game. And I think that Denver, because a lot of these guys come on over from the D2 ranks, is being a little bit undervalued here. So I'm at line at 18.5. I'm going to be willing to take a shot here on Denver. So I total 152.5. I also like the under. And now we hit the extra games.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
306-641, 306-642. It is IU Indianapolis, and they play us a Long Island. Long Island, they pick them to a 1-point underdog. Totals anywhere between 160 was the opener. I'm right now seeing this at a 165, and I'm going to be willing to take a shot here on the under. I did set my total at 155.5. Now, I recognize that IU Indy played that north of 100-point game against Ohio State. They lose that game by a count of, I believe, 118-102, and this is going to be much more of the norm for IU Indianapolis. Ben Howlett comes on over from West Liberty, where at the Division II rank, his team was averaging 100.9 points per contest, and he brought with him a lot of those guys from the non-D1 ranks, like Jackson Edwards is one of the few guys that has Division I experience. Cameron Tinsley is one of those guys that followed him up. He had 22 points in that season opener against Ohio State. J.P. Dragas, he's someone that is going to be able to tear it up after he was at the non-Division I level as well, and that's a big reason why I did set IU Indianapolis as a 3.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay it, but I do think that Long Island is going to be able to get a little bit more of a slow and controlled style. We saw with Long Island last year. They were actually a relatively rock solid defense and a team that just got absolutely nothing generated on offense whatsoever. Last season, I recognize that Gerald Gilliard was the associate coach and it's no longer there, but I mean, they were 290th in terms of total possessions, scoring 338th in 3-point shooting percentage, and just 318th in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. But you've got Shedrick Lasu, hopefully I said that correct, a guy that was able to give you about 7 rebounds per game last season. Malachi Smith is back after he gave you 17 points per game, but is a guy that was shooting less than 30% from 3-point range a season ago, so that's a little bit of an issue. They do have a guy in Jamal Fuller who I really like. He had 12 points, 9 number 1 against Notre Dame last year, was giving the team 12.5 points, 6 rebounds per game, so I do think that there's reason to believe that LIU is going to be able to slow down this game a little bit more, and I think that they're seeing the tape from night number 1, and for LIU, they were top 50 team in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage last year, a top 85 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. I think that Long Island's defense is actually going to help them hang in there and slow down this IU Indy team a little bit. I did set my total at 155.5. I like the under, but with IU Indy, made them a 3.5-point favorite. I think that these D2 boys are being a little bit undervalued, so I'm going to be willing to take IU Indy on this rather pick'em line. 306-643, 306-644. Louisville plays host to Jackson State. Jackson State, sizable underdogs here of 32-30.5 points. So on this game, it is is between 160.5 to 162.5. This was an opener or more around 160.5 with regards to total line. I set mine at 152.5. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the under. I recognize that Mo Williams' team is not necessarily going to be super duper slow, but I do think that the lack of size for Jackson State is going to be a little bit of an issue in this game. And we actually saw Louisville play some really good defense. Night number one, I recognize it was against South Carolina State, but South Carolina State couldn't even get to 20 points in the first half of that one in Louisville. They came out guns blazing in terms of their three-point shooting. This is a step up in competition, and again, with Jackson State, they got completely lambasted night number one against Illinois, but I do think that there's reason to believe that they're a little bit better than that. You bring back Deshaun Ruffin, who was a former starter over at Ole Miss a few seasons ago. He was averaging in the neighborhood about 13 to 14 points per contest a season ago. Jamie Mitchell Jr. is back in the backcourt after he was logging about 10.5 points per game. Now, is this Louisville team a pretty ridiculous team that has quite a bit more down low than they had a season ago? Absolutely. Even with them losing James Scott from a season ago, the fact that you've got Javon Hadley back, who had very good versatility, double-figure scores, 6-plus rebounds per game a season ago, is big. Isaac McNeely coming on over after he was shooting about 42% from three-point from Virginia was epic. And then you've got Keani Ruths, who he came out of nowhere and had 20 points, night number one. Mikel Brown is a freshman to be able to take note of as well. You still have a few banged-up players with regards to this team. Ali Khalifa just getting out there on the floor after he missed a full year of college basketball. They're still dealing with the Deshaun Pryor injury as well. We'll see when slash if he's able to get it back out there on the floor. And then Adrian Woolley, how he's going to be able to fit into the system is a little bit of a question mark there. Devin Reed coming over after he was at Louisiana Tech, I do think it's a little bit of upside. If I'm not mistaken, he actually began his career over at Louisville as well. So you do have an interesting circumstance here with Jackson State. They are going to be an undersized team, but you do have a Louisville team that they are missing quite a few of their bigs in this matchup. And I do think that for Jackson State, after they just couldn't get a shot to drop against Illinois, they're going to be able to do a little bit of a better job here against Louisville. And I do think that Louisville's defense is much improved from a season ago. So set my total at a 152.5. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on this total under. And I set my line at 28.5. We'll take the 30 plus here with Jackson State. 306-645, 306-646. You've got Xavier playing against Le Moyne. And Le Moyne is a underdog of 22 to 22.5 points. So this game, you're going to be finding it at a 158 to a 158.5. And made my total 152.5. I do like the under. Now, Xavier was very much slowed down night number one against Marist. Marist is always one of the more notorious defensive teams in all of college basketball. But I mean, if you look at what Richard Pitino did a season ago when he was over at New Mexico, yes, his team played very up-tempo. They were a top 40 team in terms of total possessions per game. They are also a top 25 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, and you've got a lot of guys that come on over after they were at the mid-major level last season, and they're trying to make that leap up to the Xavier team. Malik Moore appears to be a nice headline scorer for this team as he had 16 points night number one after he was a rock solid player over at Montana last year, was averaging 12.5 points per game. But you do have to have some question mark as to how good someone like an All Right is going to be coming over from Valparaiso, where he was rock solid. You did have Richard Pitino bring over a few guys from New Mexico as well. Phil Brochevin, he's one of the main guys that is going to be coming on over, but it feels like this team is having a little bit of a tough time finding their rotations. Roddy Anderson, who was starring over at, I believe, Boise State a few seasons ago. Trey Carroll coming over from Florida Atlantic. It looks like they're going to need to play some big minutes. And then you've got on the flip side of things, a Le Moyne team that they were very successful year number one at the Division I level. Last year, things were a little bit less than savory for them. Nate Champion, as the coach, he was able to get them a nice win against a non-D1 team, and they bring in a guy by the name of Tennessee Rainwater. That's an interesting name, to say the least. He was over at Utah Tech last season. He was averaging about 4 rebounds per game, saw a few starts. He figures to be a big part of this team down low, where this team is going to be getting probably shellacked a little bit down low. They have a lack of size. You're looking at Shiloh Jackson at 6'9", being your main big man, but I do think that they've got a nice find in Dang Gehring, who last season was supplying the team with about 8 points per contest, was limited to only 13 games due to injury, but as a part-time starter, he was showing a little bit of promise for this team, and they brought in some freshmen that looked really good night one. Josiah Lee, Eli Greenberg, they both had 12 points apiece, so I do think that for the Xavier bunch, should they be able to win this game, and honestly win this game rather handily, yes, but I also do think that Amitri Moss, who comes on over from North Florida, is going to be a little bit of an impact player for this Lemoyne team, and I had some concerns with Xavier Knight, number one, especially on the offensive side of things. I did set my line at a 22.5. 22 is my absolute max lay with Xavier. Right now, this is between 22 and 22.5. Xavier should be able to just run things down low, but I also take a shot on the under, set my total at 152.5. 306-647, 306-648. Quinnipiac is playing host to Central Connecticut. Central Connecticut, an underdog of 9 points, and your total on this game, it is 148. Did make a total of a 146.5. I'm going to be in on this total under for Quinnipiac. They played a very high-tempo game against St. John's. I think that that's just a little bit more St. John's being high-octane than anything else. And Quinnipiac was a top 100 team in terms of total possessions per game last year. You look at their games outside of Metro Atlantic basketballs, a lot of teams in the Metro Atlantic, they play a little bit more slow. They were a top 75 team in terms of total possessions per game, but I do think that there is some upside with this Quinnipiac team, which is why I did set them as an 8.5-point favorite. If we can get down to an 8 or less, I'd be willing to lay it. 9 is just becoming my buy point on a Central Connecticut team that has to turn over a lot from last season, and they're going to have a tough time being able to match up with Amari Monroe, who's averaging 18 points, 9 rebounds per game 8 seasons ago. Jaden Zimmerman is a rock-solid backcourt piece who did have 19 points in that game against St. John's, but last year, 11 points per contest, shot about 34.5% from 3, but here's the issue that you've got with Quinnipiac. Last year, they were well outside the top 275 in terms of three-point shooting percentage, and Central Connecticut, again, they do lose so many guys like Abdul Momoa and company from a season ago, but this was one of the better defensive teams in all of college basketball. They were a top 40 team in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. They did a nice job generating some turnovers, not allowing wide-open looks from three-point range. They give in a guy from Chicago State and Gabe Spinelli, who's got relatively good versatility. He last season over at Chicago State was registering about 9.5 points, 3 boards, 3 assists, a steal per contest. He should fit like a glove in this system. And then you've got Darren Smith Jr., who figures to be the head of the sink this season after he was a little bit more of a sixth man a season ago, shot 46% from three with 7 points, 3 rebounds per contest as a 6'7" do-it-all sort of player. And he, in their first game, had 20 points. I recognize that they were playing against a nice, hardy non-D1 team, but you know what? Still looked relatively solid. Jay Rogers is still in the program after he's been there for quite a bit of time, and he's not necessarily a guy that's going to be like a takeover guy or anything like that, but should be a nice facilitator. He had 7 assists, night number one, and they did a nice job bringing in a guy in Melo Sanchez, who actually began his career over at Arkansas. He has been a guy that has played a lot at the non-Division One level as well. We're going to see what he's going to be able to deliver moving forward, but I do think that the overall guard play of the Central Connecticut team and the way that they play rock-solid defense is going to be able to keep them lively in this game. I did, as a result, set my total at a 146.5. This is a Central Connecticut team that I think is going to be getting back to their roots of playing relatively slow and control basketball. They were 300th in the country in terms of total possessions per game a season ago. Again, Quinnipiac, they're a bit more of an up-tempo team. Quinnipiac last year, they were hovering more in the neighborhood of about 56th in terms of total possessions per game, but I do think that Central Connecticut puts on the clamps a little bit, and that keeps them lively in this game. At a 9+, I'm going to be willing to take the points with Central Connecticut, and I'm going to be willing to take a shot on this under as well. 36-649, 36-650. Bethune-Cookman is on the road against Miami. Miami is a sizable favorite here of 16 to 15.5 points. So on this game, you're going to be finding at a 153 to 153.5. Give me the points with Bethune-Cookman. I set my line at a 13.5 for Miami. I do think that Jai Lucas was a relatively solid hire, and night number one, we saw just the overall versatility and the size that this Miami team is going to have. You have to love the fact that they bring in the Indiana big man from a season ago, Malik Renu. He had 20 points night number one. He's a guy that's able to give you a little bit of facilitation, and they brought in a nice 3-point shooter in True Washington. Who was shooting 40%+ from 3-point over at New Mexico a season ago. Trey Donaldson is a good fit coming in from Michigan as well. And Ernest Udeh is certainly going to be a difference maker down low. He's averaging 7+ rebounds per game over at TCU. 14-14 in that night number one win that they were able to have over Jacksonville. But that said, I do think that this is a Bethune-Cookman team that can actually match a lot of the athletes that you've got on the other end. And you can't say that very often about a mid-major team like Bethune-Cookman. They bring in Atterio Morris, a former top 30 recruiter at 20 points, 10 rebounds off the bench in that game against Auburn. And now you've got the reuniting of a pair of guys that were so good together 2 seasons ago in Zion Harmon and Jacoby Heady. And Harmon didn't even play night number one for this Bethune-Cookman team. So, I mean, you've got a lot of guys that are sort of boomerang transfers. They were without Dr. Bradley in that game as well. So that's something that you do want to be taking note of. They bring in a guy by the name of Ariel Bland, who was very rock solid over at UC Santa Barbara as well. 2 years ago, 2023-24 2024 campaign, was putting in there 6.6 boards a block per contest, fell out of favor last year, and he brings his team a little bit of rough and tumble down low. Daniel Ruzon at 6'9", he was one of the team's top rebounds from a season ago. He's back in the fold as well. You've got just really, really nice pieces for this Bethune-Cookman team. I think that they're going to be able to hold in there. This is one of the most talented swag teams that I've ever found, and I mean, with Reggie Ward, he didn't even play night number one as well. I think that he's going to be on the shelf for this game. He's averaged 8.5 plus points per contest each out of the last few years at Bethune-Cookman, but this is a Bethune-Cookman team that all of a sudden has a lot of depth. Probably the best swag team I've ever seen, and I think that Miami, a team that's in a lot of transition, they might have a little bit of a tough time with that. So this is a circumstance where I'm going to be willing to take those points with Bethune-Cookman. I set them as an underdog of 13.5 points, and if you go back to when they had Jacoby Heedy in the fold 2 seasons ago, prior to him transferring out over to Central Michigan last season, this was a top 20 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, and I do think that this game is going to be featuring a lot of dead possession. So I did set a total here of a 153.5. I do think that Miami is going to be looking to push tempo. 153 is my max buy point on the over. So looking at that over to go along with the points with Bethune-Cookman. 386-651, 386-652. Auburn is going to be playing us a Merrimack. The Merrimack Warriors are 22.5 to a 23.5 point dog. Totals between 145 to a 145.5. Give me the points with Merrimack. I set them as a 17-point underdog. We talked about this a little bit with Blake Lovell, but you've got a Merrimack team that they've got a distinct style of being able to generate turnovers. Top 5 team in all of college basketball in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis each out of the last 3 seasons. And while Merrimack does have to replace some of their top scorers from a season ago, like Adam Clark was a really nice player for them a season ago. He was averaging about 19 points per contest. You do lose someone like a Sean Trumper as well. He was rock solid. I like the pickup of Andres Marrero. He fell out of favor last year at LaSalle. 2 years ago, was averaging about 8 points per contest, shot darn near 39.5%. From 3-point range, Casey Uguakazi. He comes on over after he was at East Texas A&M, a 6'8" big man that should be able to give this team a little bit more versatility, as he was last season over at Texas A&M Commerce/East Texas A&M, able to give the team 4 boards, a little bit of a part-time starter, so that helps him out down low because that is typically the main kryptonite for this team. And Malik Edman, he was very silent night number one, but this is someone that has been in the program for quite a bit. Go back to the 2021-22 campaign, he was registering about 9.5 points per contest, career about 35% three-point shooter. He's able to generate a steal per contest. He's a very nice tight end guy, and for this Auburn unit, it's just a new look with having Stephen Pearl at the helm, and I mean, they lose so much that they had other than Todd Pettiford from that Final Four team from a season ago, so these guys are all trying to find their bearings. Keyshawn Hall looked very good night number one, 28 points in that one, and he last season over at Central Florida, 17 plus points per game. He's able to do a nice job grabbing boards if you need him to. He'll facilitate a little bit, and you've got Abdi Bashir, he comes on over from the junior college level. He was one of the more highly touted junior college transfers. He was very silent that night, number one. So that means that the onus falls on Kevin Overton to be able to step up after he at Texas Tech was rock solid 2 seasons ago. Over at Drake was a solid player that was able to register about 11.5 points per contest, but he's taken a relatively big stride forward. He's never been looked to as more of the, shall we say, dominant guys in the backcourt, so he's going to need to play a little bit of a bigger role. Keyshawn Murphy, he's going to be rock solid down low for Auburn, and that's going to be a big matchup nightmare for Merrimack, but I think that Merrimack is going to be able to generate quite a few turnovers on an Auburn team that they've got quite a bit few moving parts. They've got a new coach in Stephen Pearl that, I mean, it's very clear that he's just not his father as of right now, and I think the Merrimack holds in there with their defense-oriented style. Semi-total 141, like the under, and with Auburn, set them as 17-point favorites, so we'll take these points with Merrimack. 306-653, 306-654. South Alabama plays host to Alcorn State. Alcorn State is a underdog of 14 points. The last game is 143.5. Set a total of a 142, so I'm going to be in on the under. Alcorn State played a very harebrained game against Florida State. I think that that's a little bit more Florida State rather than anything else, as Jake Morton, he was an assistant over at Florida State a season ago. He takes over this Alcorn State team after they lost Coach Landon Busey to Chicago State in the offseason, and I do think that for Alcorn State, it's going to be all about just finding the pieces that they can rely upon to be a little bit better defensively, because the offense actually looked relatively fine night number one. Nick Woodyard, he was able to come in, 16.6 boards. He was a solid player over at Stony Brook a season ago. You have to figure that you're going to be able to get some relatively good production out of Travis Roberts in the backcourt as well. Roberts is a guy with some experience over at Jackson State along with Maris, and he never really played massive minutes with either either of those teams, but actually did see a few starts when he was over at Jackson State a few seasons ago, so that'll help them out. This team is going to be relatively outgunned down low, though. You just look at the overall size they've got with this Alcorn State team, other than William Henderson, who really doesn't have a lot of Division I experience. You just don't have these guys that I think are going to be necessarily imposing down low, and I think that that's going to be a bit of an issue for them moving forward. They face off against the South Alabama team that maybe they're not necessarily going to be like menaces down low, and they're going to dare you to shoot threes. With South Alabama last year, over 58% of opponents' field goal attempts came from three-point range, by far number one in all of college basketball, but what South Alabama does a really good job of is being able to generate turnovers. They were a top 40 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis last season, and while they lost their top three scorers from a season ago, more of those ancillary pieces like Randy Brady, J.J. Wheat, these are guys that are back from a season ago. John Broome was out for really not a lot of production in night number one, but I mean, this is a guy that last year, he was putting in there 5.5 points, 5.5 rebounds per game after he went scoreless in number one. I expect him to have a little bit of a bounce back. Adam Olson is just another one of these line of guys that they just find from the non-divisional level that fit like a glove. He had 23 points in that opening game, so that impressed me quite a bit. With Wheat, he does a really nice job of having a nose for the ball, being able to generate turnovers. This is a South Alabama team that I think is going to be improved with their three-point shooting as well. You've got a guy with a bit of upside in Chaz Harris. He's another guy that comes in from the non-D1 ranks. He had 10 points, 7 assists in that night number one game as well. I think that this South Alabama style is going to lead to a little bit of a lower scoring game, and I do think that it takes hold against an Alcorn State team that I sense that they're still trying to find their identity just a little bit here. So it's a circumstance where I'm going to be willing to lay up to 15.5 with South Alabama, set them as a 16-point favorite, and I do like this under semi-total at a 142. 3-6, 6-55, 3-6, 6-56. It is Texas A&M playing host to Texas Southern. Texas Southern, an underdog of 20.5 points. 160-160.5 is your total, and for Texas A&M, this is clearly a team that's going to be looking to find their rotations. I did set Texas A&M as a sizable favorite, but I think that we've gone too far here. I set my line at 22.5. I'm going to be willing to take the points with Texas Southern. With Texas A&M, they had Hucky Saya line changes, night number one in their win against Northwestern State. And I mean, to their credit, they did a nice job of having a lot of guys find minutes. You had 10 different players play at least 16 minutes, which that's relatively impressive, but this is a Texas Southern team that they very much know who they are. Dwayne Posey, he is a guy that comes back from a season ago. It's a Texas Southern team that was much improved with their three-point shooting from a season ago. They had a little bit of a rough time on glass, and I do think that this Texas A&M team is actually going to be very rock solid in terms of their overall rebounding, bringing in Frederico. So when I say he named him twice, he had 8 rebounds, eight number one. He's been a relatively good low post presence, even going back to his time over at Pittsburgh. You got Zach Clemens, who spent a lot of time at Kansas. He was just lost in the shadow of Hunter Dickinson for a very long time, and Mackenzie Mbakpo did not play number one. It's going to be interesting to see if he's going to be out there in this game or not. I know that he's been dealing with a few minor ailments, so that's something that hampers his team a little bit. But for Texas Southern, I do think that they have just enough to be able to hold in there. Again, I know that that night number one loss against Gonzaga, they lost that game by 40 plus points. They failed to get past a 55 point plateau. That was not necessarily tremendous for this unit, but you do have quite a few guys that returned from a season ago, like a Zatarius Moultrie, who has seen some great minutes with this team. Alex Anderson, I think, is a high upside guy who he last season was registering only about 5.5 points with this team, but go back 2 years ago what he was able to do over at Incarnate Word when he was able to supply that team with 11 points, 3 assists. Not a guy that's going to really light you up from 3-point range, but does a good job of being able to facilitate good, clean offense while standing 6'6". Jalen Weislinger, he comes in after he last season was a little bit more of an afterthought for the team, 7 points per contest coming in off the bench, but I think that he's going to be able to give the team a little bit of pop as well. I do think that with Texas A&M, there's going to be a little bit of experimentation, especially if you have Mackenzie Mbakpo out of the fold as well. And I do expect some positive regression with Texas Southern and their 3 of 21 three-point shooting that we saw in night number one. I think that that goes a little bit northward and keeps them a bit lively in this game. I did set my total at a 150.5. I think that Texas Southern going to get back to their defensive roots a little bit more in this game. So I'm going to take this 160 under to go along with the points with Texas Southern. 3-6, 6-57, 3-6, 6-58. It is Iowa State playing us a Grambling. Grambling is a very sizable underdog here, between 31.5 to 33.5 points. 139 to 142.5 is your total. So we're seeing a big divide with regards to this total. I set mine at a 134. I'm going to be in on the under. When Iowa State is really humming, they're one of the best defensive teams in all of college basketball under TJ Otzelberger. Last year, they played at a little bit of a higher tempo. Typically, this is a bit more of a mid-tempo team, and I sense night number one against Fairleigh Dickinson when they held them below 55 points that this Iowa State team is going to be looking to get back to those roots. Iowa State doesn't quite have the, shall we say, explosive scoring that they had from a season ago with losing using much of that backcourt. Sans their main guy in Tamon Lipsby. And Lipsby, not necessarily like a prolific scorer. He did have 18 points, night number one in that win against Fairleigh Dickinson. That said, he's a little bit more of a defense-oriented guy, a guy that is going to generate for you multiple turnovers per game. He's going to get everyone else involved, as this team's top shooter is probably Milan Mimosilovic, who he, throughout his 2 years at Iowa State, has shot over 38% from three at 6'8". Nice combo player, and then I have to love what Joshua Jefferson is able to bring to the table. He last season at 6'8" was generating for the team multiple steals, 13 points, 7.5 rebounds, nearly a block per contest. He just does a bit of everything for this unit, and I do think that moving forward, you're going to be able to get some good production out of Dominic Nelson. Comes on over from Utah Valley, where he was a nice double-figure scorer for them. Again, not a guy that really lit you up from three-point range or anything like that, but even though this team takes a little bit of a setback with regards to that three-point shooting, I think that they are going to be one of the most rock-solid defensive teams in all of college basketball, and that's a big reason why I'm going to be willing to lay this number. I did set them as a 34-point favorite. Now with Grambling, they have one of the best against the spread coaches in all of college basketball over the last year plus in Patrick Curry. He did an amazing job over at Florida A&M last season, and he did have a few guys follow him, like a Roderick Coffey, who wasn't much of a scorer. He was only averaging like 6 or 7 points per contest over at Florida A&M, but a guy that's at 6'4", going to give you some rebounding, was throwing in there 3 assists per contest. Ricky Ballard is going to be a big part of the team as well. He was over at West Georgia last year, registering in the neighborhood about 6.5 points per contest, shot 38.5% from three. This is for a Grambling team that I think is probably going to have a little bit of issue with regards to their three-point shooting, but I think that Jamel Lane, who comes on over from Northwestern State, he's going to be able to help this team offensively. Has never been an amazing three-point shooter, but at 6'7", he does a nice job of being able to space out the floor. But I do think that with this Grambling team being in a little bit of transition, as for Grambling, they had one of the most harebrained, shall we say, non-Division I games that you're going to find against Hudson to Lutz, and they turned the ball over 15 times with 8 generated 25 turnovers themselves. I think that Grambling is going to be looking to form a little bit of defensive identity. Problem is, they're going to be running into an Iowa State team that they just generate turnovers upon turnovers. I think that you get a lot of dead possessions in this one. So I did set a total of 134. I'm in on the under, and with Iowa State, I'm going to be willing to lay up to 33.5 with them. 36-659, 36-660. It is Florida playing host to North Florida. North Florida, the mighty Osprey, are between 36-37.5 point dogs. 166.5 is your total, and I set Florida as a 36.5 point favorite. So 37.5 becomes my buy point here on North Florida. North Florida is going through quite a bit of transition, as they had a little bit of a changing of the guard at the coaching spot in the offseason after, I mean, you had the screaming coach gif for the longest of time under one Mr. Matthew Driscoll. So, I mean, that's intriguing to say the least with North Florida. But that said, with this North Florida team, they just lose so much of that high-powered scoring from the last few seasons. But I do like the way that they were able to go out there. They found some mix and match guys they think are going to be rock solid. Devin Hines is someone that I really like. He comes over from Lafayette after he was limited to just 8 games last season. You go back to what he did 2 seasons ago, he was shooting in the mid-30s from 3, 9 points, 4 boards. He'll give you a steal per contest. He's just a guy that does a nice job of being able to stuff the stat sheet. With North Florida, this has always been a team with an identity of taking a whole bunch of threes, and I think that they're going to be staying very much true to that identity. I think that Mason Lee, who just didn't see a lot of playing time last season at 6'7", he's going to be look to as a guy that is going to need to step up this season. And Alex Vargo, he was playing over at Youngstown State last season, saw some solid minutes, about 5 points per contest as a freshman. I think that he's going to be able to step up as well, spend some time at the non-Division I ranks after leaving Youngstown State as well, and was very solid at the non-Division I level. You've got some international men of mystery that come in as freshmen as well. And for Florida, this backcourt, I think, is going to have a few growing pains with regards to their defense, but I think that going up against Arizona, that made their defense look a little bit worse than what it truly is. I do think that they're going to be able to do a much better job against this North Florida team. You had Xavion Lee, night number one, put in their 14 points, 5 assists, 6 rebounds. That's much of what he did over at Princeton. I mean, this guy is one of the most versatile players in all of college basketball, so you know what you're going to be getting there. And then additionally, you've got a guy in Boogie Fland who had just 9 points in that season opening game. I think that he's going to be able to tighten up the screws. I think that he's going to be a little bit better, and I do think that this is going to be a complete bludgeoning down low. You've got Thomas Halbach, who he was able to put in there 27 points against Arizona. He'll give you 6-plus rebounds per game. He's a high 33-point shooter. Alex Condon, not quite the versatility that you're going to find with Hall, but he does a tremendous job down low. And Micah Hanlogden, not much of an offensive presence, but always a really good rebounder. And then Urban Klazar, who he was overseas 2 seasons ago, didn't see a lot of minutes a season ago. He's going to be looked to be able to give this team some big minutes. I think that he's going to be able to do so as well. Florida should be able to get the job done and get the job done very easily, but once you get past 36, I think that you've gotten to a little bit of a point of no return. And I do think that for North Florida, they are probably going to be taking a couple fewer threes than they did from a season ago with all the roster turnover. So somebody told 164.5, I'm in on the under end. 37 plus becomes my buy point on North Florida. 3-6-6-6-1, 3-6-6-6-2. It is CCU playing us to St. Francis of Pennsylvania. St. Francis is a very sizable underdog here of 24.5 to 25.5 points. 149.5 is the total. Semi line at 23.5. I'm going to be willing to take the 24 plus here with TCU. I don't think that TCU is going to lose another game as a north of 20 point favorite, as they lost that game outright against New Orleans. That was just a less than savory effort. And I mean, that's one of those games where you just take a look at the 3-point shooting performance from TCU versus what you got on New Orleans, and it was just really one of those cases where Murphy's Law happened, as New Orleans was unable to miss from 3-point range at TCU. They just flat out miss everything from 3-point range. TCU shot 11.1 from 3-point range in that game. David Punch was still rock solid down low. He was able to supply the team with 19 points, 8 rebounds, and for TCU, they actually lost a rebound battle in that game, 39-28, but that was more or less because TCU just kept on throwing up brick after brick, and New Orleans, even though they lost that turnover battle 19-10, they were just making all their shots, so I don't make a ton out of that. Jaden Pierre, Brock Harding, these are two guys that come in by the transfer portal, and they should be able to elevate this backcourt with Pierre. He was able to supply the team with 12 points per contest when he was over at Providence a season ago, and Brock Harding is a guy that does a nice job of just being able to flow good, clean offense over at Iowa last year. 5.3 assists and 2.3 turnovers per game, all while shooting darn near 40% from 3-point range, so I do think that he's going to be able to bring a lot to the table for this team. And on the other end, you do have a St. Francis team that they were actually holding in there against Oklahoma night number one. They were only down, I believe it was 1 point at the half. Oklahoma from there, they really took hold in the second half. That said, I do think that this is a St. Francis team that is still going to be able to show you a lot of fight, and I think the big key for St. Francis is being able to have a big performance out of the gentleman that and Carter Ward 2 seasons ago last year when he was over at UTSA, meet me for the Roadrunners, was stuck to the bench. That'd be Sky Wicks. He had 20 points, 5 rebounds in that opening night performance, and when he was over at Incarnate Word, he was pulling in there north of 7 rebounds per contest, so this is someone that needs to be a big impact guy for the team, and I do fully expect him to be just that. And then additionally, you've got a guy in Chris Moncrief, who he's back from a season ago. He was a nice ancillary piece for them. Zion Russell is going to need to have a big part of the offense. He was a starter over at Niagara a season ago, a guy that shot about 35% per 3, 7 points, pair of assists per contest. And for TCU, it does feel like with having a new look backcourt, they're trying to figure some things out there. And also losing Ernest Uday doesn't make them quite as strong down low. So I think that St. Francis holds in there. And what I think is going to be very much a defense-oriented and a slog of a game at TCU, it's very clear that the 3-point shooting is not going to be there. I did set my total at 135.5. I very much like the under, and I'm going to be willing to take those points with St. Francis of Pennsylvania. 3-6-6-63, 3-6-6-64. You've got St. Louis playing host to Chicago State. Chicago State, an underdog of between 29 to 30 points, 152.5 is the total. And I'm going to be able to take the points with Chicago State. I set them as a 24.5 point underdog. St. Louis was able to have a nice 20 plus point win over Southeast Missouri State night number one, but they did lose that turnover battle 15-9. Now, Robbie Avila, after he was not very efficient last season, he went from having 1.8 turnovers per game 2 years ago at Indiana State to 3.3 last year at St. Louis. It appears as though they're taking a little bit more off his plate, and he's going to have much more help out there in the backcourt. That's going to be a lot of them out, as St. Louis last season was one of the most banged up teams in all of college basketball. Being able to have someone like a Kellen Thames, who had 12 points in that night number one game, is big. And they bring in a guy in Deion Brown, who 2 seasons ago, when he was over at UMBC, was averaging 19 points per contest, was still putting up solid numbers as a starter over at Boston College last season. That very much helps out the backcourt. You do have to wonder a little bit about the main facilitation. You have to think that Brown and Thames are going to have the ball in their hands quite a bit. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit of Trey Green as well, who he comes over from Xavier after being a top 100 recruit. Is not necessarily a guy that's going to light you up from 3-point range, though, so I do think that for St. Louis, that's a little bit of a question mark. And for St. Louis last year, they were one of the more miserable teams in terms of grabbing offensive rebounds. They night number one did have 14 rebounds against Southeast Missouri State, so you do love to see that. But I do think that Landon Busey's squad, even though Chicago State lost that opening game against DePaul by 30, I think that they're going to be able to get things rolling as Busey comes on over from Alcorn State and brought with him a pair of guys from the SWAC in Braylon Bush along with Marcus Tankersley. Bush was very good at being able to generate turnovers this season ago, and he had 2 steals in that opening game. You have Kinkersley, who was a top scorer over at Elkhorn State last season, follows coach up 16 points, 9 rebounds to be able to start the season. So you do like to see that for Elkhorn State. The big thing for this team is that they're really bereft of size right now. Other than Stephen Byard, he's standing 6'8". You really don't have a lot of guys that saw any minutes whatsoever that are above like 6'6", 6'7". So they're going to get a little bit lambasted. I think that Robbie Avila is going to have himself a nice game, but I do think that the backcourt of Chicago State does just enough to be able to hold in there. Did set my total at a 146.5. I'm going to be one take shot on the under. Elkhorn State seems typically relatively controlled, a little bit slower, so I do think that BC is going to be able to bring that style on over to Chicago State. Like that under, and I'm going to be one take the points with Chicago State, 306-665, 306-666. You've got North Texas playing us to Northwestern State. Northwestern State is a 15-point underdog, and your total on this game, you're going to be finding it at a 138.5, and with Northwestern State, I set them as an underdog of 8.5 points. I'm going to be one to take these points, as with North Texas, this is just not the same team that they were a season ago. You have a big, giant coaching change, and I do think that for North Texas, they're still going to be a respectable program out there in the American Conference, but that said, it's a downgrade going to Daniel Robinson, who he was the coach over at Cleveland State a season ago. Now, for North Texas, they were able to get the job done night number one as they knocked off New Mexico Highlands, and they pulled away in the second half. I don't think that this is going to be quite as slow of a team as we saw the last few seasons, and with Grant McCaslin and Russ Hodge, I know those were two of the slower teams in all of college basketball, but you've got Josiah Shackelford. He comes on over after he was over at Florida Gulf Coast a season ago and really wasn't able to get out there on the floor too much. He had 16 points in that opening game. Now, Will McClendon is going to be the X factor. He began his career at UCLA and San Jose State, a former top 100 recruit that was averaging 12 points per contest at San Jose State a season ago. He's able to give you 3 assists per game. I think that this is really an elevator with regards to backcourt, but where you're going to be able to get down low out of Dylan Arndt, who he followed his coach on over from Cleveland State. That's going to be big because he and Shackelford are like the lone two guys on the roster that are expected to give you minutes. They're above 6'6", so I do think that that allows a chance for Northwestern State, who they did get blasted night number one against Texas A&M. That was a little bit less than savory, but that said, I do think that that is going to allow them to be able to have a little bit of a chance to be able to hold in this game. Now, Edison Patterson being on the full from last year's Northwestern State team hurts them, but Micah Thomas, who is a nice scorer out there in the backcourt, he had 28 big points in that night number one. He's a guy that's able to give you some nice three-point shooting. And this is a Northwestern State team that I think is going to be able to have some relatively good backcourt play. And I do think that down low, you're going to be able to get some relatively good production out of the 6'5" combo player and Chris Mabrew. Hopefully I said that correct. He's a guy that has been within the program for the last few seasons. Not necessarily a guy that's going to like lay you up from three-point at about 6'5", 6'6", but I think his versatility is going to be big. Izzy Miles, he was playing over at Tarleton State last season. He did a nice job in terms of generating a steal and a half per game, 7.5 points per contest. Only played in 13 minutes night number one. I expect him to have a little bit more of a role with this offense moving forward as well. And I think that the big thing for this Northwestern State team is that they were without Willie Williams along with Quinton Bolton night number one. Now, I expect Willie Williams to be out of the fold. Bolton is going to be a little bit more of a game time decision, but if you don't have them out there on the floor, you have to figure that Justin Redmond is going to be seeing a few more minutes, as he last season was someone that was given this bunch of like 3.5 points per contest, 35.5% three-point shooter. I think that there's a little bit of upside there. I do think that it's going to be a little bit more small ball with Northwestern State currently dealing with some injuries to some of their bigger men, but J.C. Riley, I think, is a capable big man of being able to help this team hold in this game, as last season he was pulling in there in that neighborhood of only about 2 or so rebounds per game, but is a capable shot blocker that began his career at the junior college level that I do think has a little bit of upside against a North Texas team that just doesn't have necessarily a ton down low, and it's a Cleveland State team that under the tutelage of Robinson coming on over now to North Texas that was generating a lot of turnovers, so I think they get a sloppier game in this one. I did set my total at a 136.5. I'm going to take the points with Northwestern State, and I'm going to be in on the under, 306-667, 306-668. SMU plays host to Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Corpus Christi, a 22.5 to a 23.5 point dog. So on this game between 154.5 to a 155.5, and I did set my line at a 19.5. I'm going to be willing to take the points with Corpus Christi. SMU had some shakiness in their performance against Tarleton State. Now, they were able to get the job done and won that game by 20 points, but that was a Tarleton State team that last year was in the bottom five in terms of their points scored on a per-possession basis, and they gave up over 74 points in that game. SMU, I think, is going to be very rock-solid in terms of their offense. You bring back Kevin Miller. I refuse to call him Boopy, but Kevin Miller, he last season was a really good facilitator. Vader was able to give the team over 5 assists per contest, and he's a really, really good scorer that's able to shoot in the mid-30s from 3-point range, 14-plus points per contest last season, and night number one, he was able to go out there at 20 points, 5 assists. You bring in Jerome Pierre, who you over at Jacksonville State last season was averaging over 21 points per contest. You put in their 21, night number one, and they should be able to have a nice advantage on Lois Samat Yitoglu, 7'2" big man from Turkey. He had 8 rebounds in that night number one game, and he's back from a season ago. So you've got some relatively good camaraderie across this roster. Meanwhile, you've got a Texas A&M Corpus Christi team that, I mean, they have always been a relatively solid team in terms of being able to generate some turnovers. They've been hit or miss with regards to their overall defense, but I do think that they do just enough to be able to hold in there, as this is now year number 3 of the Jim Shaw era, 20-plus wins in each of their first 2 years under him. While they did have a few moving parts in the offseason, having Sheldon Williams back after he was limited to only 19 games a season ago, but was averaging about 6.5 points, 4.5 boards, has some nice size at 6'8". That should be able to help them hang in there a little bit more down low. And then with having a guy in front of Yetna in the fold, I think that that's absolutely massive for them. He was really good at the non-Division I level at 6'7", had some nice versatility. And this is going to be a team that's going to be relying upon some non-Division I transfers to be able to kick things up. But I do like the fact that they also have a pass-first guy in Davion Houston, who you look at him throughout his career. He had 5 assists in that night number one game. He was supposed to be a nice star over at Coastal Carolina, was unable to get out there on the floor last season, but in his career over at Longwood, was always like a 6.5 point per game scorer that would give out a pair of assists per contest. Spent a career about 33% three-point shooter. I think that this elevates a team that very much looks to go down low. Texas A&M Corpus Christi, year in and year out, they're outside the top 300 with regards to their overall percentage of shots that come from three-point range. I think that they're going to be able to do a good enough job of be able to get the ball down low. I think that they're going to be sprinkling in there some players like Cam Parker, who he comes in after he last season was a nice ancillary piece. I was averaging about 5 points per contest as a part-time starter to be able to take a stride forward with shooting about 39.5% from three-point range. And I do think that SMU is going to be looking to make things a little bit more hairbrainy, a little bit more crazy. Did set my total 155.5. I do like the over to go along with the points with Corpus Christi, 306-669, 306-670. You've got Loyola Chicago playing on some Mercy Earths. Mercy Earths is an underdog of 21.5 points, 145.5 to 146 is your total. Set Loyola Chicago as a 24.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. Actually, Loyola Chicago did play a very up-tempo game. Night number one against Cleveland State. I actually do think that's more or less Cleveland State going in a new direction rather than anything else. But for Loyola Chicago, you know that they're going to have a nice advantage down low with Miles Rubin, who's staying 6'10". He's been able to give the team about a block and a half per contest over the last few seasons. Loyola Chicago, not a team that's necessarily going to generate a lot of second and third chances on glass, but they won't let you grab those second and third chances as well. And for Loyola Chicago, it was very interesting in that night number one game, they really did not have a lot out of Dominic Harris, who he was a very solid scorer a few seasons ago over at Loyola Marymount. Fell out of favor a little bit more at UCLA and Gonzaga, and they just decided not to play him. Instead, they went a little bit more to DeWolf Tavares, who comes on over from Charleston, where he was about a 40% three-point shooter, and he cooked 5 of 7 from three-point range, 16 points in that season opening game. And Joseph Ala Joseph, I think, is a very underrated player. He was at Minnesota and Cal last few seasons, a 6'7" combo player, as a career 38% three-point shooter. He gives this team another dimension on offense that they really just haven't had before. Justin Moore is a really nice pass-first guy that has spent the last few seasons a little bit banged up. And then on the other end for Mercy Earths, this team is one of the slower teams in all of college basketball since coming up to the Division I level. They have been outside the top 300 in terms of total possessions per game. They were unable to get to the 60-point plateau against Northwestern in their season opening game. And for this Mercy Earths team, they just flat out don't have a lot of size either, so they've got a lot of things that are going to be working against them in this game. You got Mikalas Ivanauskas, who's staying 6'8". He was able to shoot in the low to mid-30s from three-point range for this team. He's able to pull in there like 4 or so rebounds per game, so he's going to do a nice job holding down the four for them, but what are you going to be able to get outside of him is a question, as Mercy Earths really wasn't able to bring in a lot of Division I transfers in the offseason. They lost so many guys that made them successful from a season ago. This is now Bernie Blunt's team. Blunt last season and supplied the team with about 12.5 points, assists and a half per contest. They're going to be looking in the backcourt at him to be able to provide quite a bit. And DeSean Jackson is a guy that I think is going to be able to step up as well. This is someone that in a 24-game sample size last season was giving the team like an assist and a half per contest, shot in the mid-30s from three-point range as a 6'2" guy that is very much looking to drive to the rim. But there's just not a lot of size with regards to this team. I think that Miles Rubin is going to be able to absolutely eat down low. And I do think that Mercier is a squad that just really struggled with regards as their offense side number one against Northwestern. I think that they're going to struggle here as well. One lay up to 24 with Loyola Chicago, and somebody told 138.5 in on the under, and we wrap things up with 3 of 6, 6.70, 3 of 6, 6.72. It is Portland, and they play us Arkansas Pine Bluff. Pine Bluff is an underdog of 15 to 16 points. The last game, it is 157.5 to 159.5, and made a total of 155.5. I'm in on the under. Pine Bluff was a bottom 10 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis and one of your more up-tempo teams in all of college basketball. But coming off of scoring only 50 points against Washington, that's a little bit of a concern. And this is a Portland team that they themselves just bled points last season. They were outside the top 340 in terms of their points allowed on a per possession basis. And now they have to replace four of their top five scorers from a season ago. So I've got some massive concerns when it comes to this bunch in Portland. For Portland, no longer do you have the likes of Chris Austin and company in there. And when Shante Leggins took over the program, they were able to hit the ground running right away when they had their guys coming on over from Eastern Washington. Those guys are all gone. So now they're going to be looking a lot more to some of these international men of mystery and some of these guys that come up from the non-divisional lengths, like a Garrett Nikoulas, who he had 9 points, 10 rebounds in their season opening game against a non-division one team. Jermaine Belsinger Webb, he came on over from American a few seasons ago. He's a true seven footer that I think is going to be able to give this team a little bit of rough and tumble, and that's going to be a little bit difficult for this Pine Bluff team to be able to match up with. Pine Bluff doesn't have a lot of size, but they bring in Keon Williams. He was the top scorer over at Abilene Christian with 13 points per contest, began his career over at Oklahoma State, a very highly touted guy, but he needs to find his footing because he was actually dismissed from the Abilene Christian program in like late August. There was something that happened off the court. I'm not sure what happened off the court, but there was something that happened off the court, and now he's trying to be able to find a little bit of camaraderie with the rest of his teammates. Meanwhile, you've got on the flip side for Portland, Makai Balu, who I think is going to be able to take some nice strides forward. Last year was averaging about 5 points per contest, so he should be able to give this team a little bit of versatility at 6'5", but I do think that for Pine Bluff, even though they got completely blasted night number one against Washington, I actually think that that's Washington being good rather than anything else. And then you've got Yaquan Scott, who I think is going to be really nice for this bunch as well. He began his career over at Mississippi State, just was unable to get out there on the floor over at Mississippi State or UTSA when he was with the Roadrunners in his small sample size of 6 games before he got hurt. He was averaging a steal, 7.5 points, 4.5 rebounds per game, and was shooting over 40% from 3-point range at 6'8". So that's a lot of versatility that I think that Portland is going to have a tough time matching up with. Again, the low post play, it is just not there with this Pine Bluff team. That said, I do think that the overall backcourt play is going to be able to do just enough for them to hold in there, and I do think that for Pine Bluff, this is a team that isn't quite the same with regards to offense that they were a season ago, but I think defensively they might be a scooge a bit better on Portland in a lot of transition in terms of finding scoring with all their top scorers from a season ago gone. So I told 155.5. I like the under, and I'm willing to take the points with Pine Bluff. That'll wrap things up for the Thursday edition of Coast to Coast Heaps, now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Heaps, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter /X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters CM, naming does not matter, so as per usual, please send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Big thanks once again to Blake Lovell, who does such tremendous work over at Southeastern 16. He joined me in the last segment, coming at you guys every single day on this podcast, regular season and off season, and we're getting fix and analysis on every single game, every single day. So I'll be back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you.